Hey guys, the EV revolution. Is it stalling? Is it racing ahead? What's happening? Do we still want EVs? Do they still make sense? Can we afford them? Can the industry even continue to build them? Does it have enough materials? Will we be able to meet that 2030 deadline here in the UK to ban the sale of new petrol and diesel cars and only have EVs? For that matter, will Europe be able to meet its deadline? Well, I'll tell you everything in this video. Brown car guy. A brown car guy. Brown car guy. So firstly, before we get into this, let me just make one thing very, very clear. And that is that I am a fan of EVs. I have absolutely nothing against them. I think they've just got better and better and better. There is a whole playlist on my channel dedicated to EV reviews. I've reviewed probably more in the last 2 years than I have in my entire 30-year career. And I can tell you that they've just got better and better and better. And as a driving experience, there's actually very little to say against them. They are actually that good. An ownership experience is a different proposition, but you've got to look at what the benefits of them are. And a very clear benefit, for example, on an EV is the energy efficiency. For example, 85 to 90% energy efficiency when it comes to electric vehicles. That's in the delivery of the energy into forward momentum, if you like, or reverse momentum if you're going backwards for some reason. Compared to, for example, a petrol or a diesel car, it's 17 to 21% energy efficiency. So you can see that there's a big discrepancy there, and that's why EVs cannot be ignored or dismissed. My personal take is that they are definitely part of the future of our transport requirements. I don't think that the only solution. I think EVs will live alongside other transport solutions or also fuel, alternative fuel solutions as well. Where EVs, I believe from my experience with them so far, work best, in fact, is in an urban environment, in a city environment. I think they perform really, really well. Because, for example, the more traffic you're in, the better they actually do, because all of the stop-go actually deploys a regen technology, which actually charges the battery, which actually increases your range. So your range isn't going down, it actually goes up in those circumstances. And if you do short journeys, most people in the UK have an average daily commute of about 30 miles. If you're able to charge them at home, they do make sense. You keep them plugged in at home, the smart meter takes care of choosing the best tariffs, best time to charge them so that you're not draining the grid and you're not being overcharged in your bill, and then probably not even 100%. You only ever need to charge those things 80%, and it should give you enough range to do what you need to do every day. When you come home, you plug it in. In the similar vein, I would say that hybrids, of course, are also worth looking at. They're probably the best stopgap or transitional technology, if you like, if you insist that EVs are the only way forward between internal combustion engine and EVs. But on top of that are plug-in hybrids, which actually kind of give you the best of both worlds, because in an urban environment, they would pretty much work as an EV. So basically never actually use the fuel in their tank. If your mileages are, you know, most plug-in hybrids will do up to 40 miles on EV alone. But if you want to take a longer trip and you're worried about stopping for charging and stuff, you don't have to. You can just put fuel in it and off you go. So EV sales. Well, let's have a look at figures for February of this year, which is last month, in fact, from the SMMT, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders. Now, they say the hybrid electric vehicles, HEVs as they call them, recorded the most significant growth of all fuel types. They were up 40%, followed by petrol. Petrol is still on the up. Up 35.8%, in fact, and it has a 56.9% market share. So it's still got more than half the market. It's still petrol. The only thing is diesels are dive bombing. They're down 7%, which is kind of ironic with diesels, I always say, because we always hated diesels. We always forced into diesels, and you know, there's a bit of deja vu here going on. Have we been here before with Dieselgate and everything? Could there be something else coming? And you know, there are issues with the electric vehicles that I'll come back to in a minute. But just sticking with diesels, the fact is that they've gone down 7%. And the irony is that actually diesel engines, especially the latest Euro 6 with the particulate filters, are cleaner than ever. Some would say that the air coming out of them is actually cleaner than the air going into them. But we've fallen out of love with those vehicles. And it's a little bit of a shame, because just as they got good, that's what happened. Coming back to the potential possibility of EVgate, this is something that I covered in my video on Ule's News recently. And that is the fact that, you know, like diesels. Diesels, we were told and sold that diesels are the ones to get. These are the best for us and for the environment and for our economy and for our pockets and everything. And then we were told, no, they're not. They're actually really, really nasty stuff because there's all this crap that's spewing out of them, which isn't the case anymore. But anyway, that's what they told us. Coming back to EVs, where this could follow a similar trajectory, is that at the moment, yes, there's zero tailpipe emissions because there's no tailpipe. That's true. However, you know, people are already highlighting the fact, in fact, Imperial College, where all these stats are normally taken from by the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, to justify his 4,000 alleged deaths from air pollution every year, which I have another video about, which you need to go and see, which is just an extrapolation but not a real figure. But anyway, Imperial College London is now saying that actually most of the emissions on the road, and this was in my previous video, are actually from tires and brakes. So all of a sudden there, you have suddenly ammunition to aim at EV drivers as well and say, well, you know, your cars are actually just as bad, if not worse, and now we've decided that EVs are a bad thing. Anyway, that's a future scenario. Coming back to the sales at the moment, zero emission capable vehicles. Meanwhile, they continued their upward trend. So these, of course, are EVs and also other vehicles such as plug-in hybrids, PHEVs as they're called. They rose by 1%, not a huge amount, 1% for the plug-in hybrids. The electric vehicles, pure battery electric vehicles, they were up 18.2%. So they did shoot up quite a bit. But of course, there is a lot of hype regarding EVs, and it's a kind of a bandwagon that a lot of people do want to jump on. Combined, plug-ins accounted for almost a quarter, 22.8% of all deliveries in February. So, you know, that is actually quite significant. And there's further growth anticipated. So that, you know, that tallies with what I'm saying. And 500,000 plug-in hybrids and full electric cars are expected. And by 500,000, actually the figure is 488,000. Plug-in hybrids and full electric vehicles are expected to join Britain's roads in 2023. That's further helped by the fact that manufacturers are bringing lots more electric cars to market. 40 new plug-in electric vehicles alone are expected to join the market this year, according to the SMMT. However, having said that, that, you know, just under 500,000 figure is actually still only just over a quarter of the total number of sales that are projected for 2023. So, you know, they still amount for basically a quarter of all car sales. Therefore, petrol cars predominantly are still selling. But is it fair to say that the EV revolution feels like it's stalling a little bit, that there's been a little bit of a hiccup in the sales of EVs? Well, let's look at that next. Brown car guy. There's data from Autotrader, and Autotrader, of course, you know, is a big classified website which, you know, covers basically the entire used market, but also the new market as well, in a sense, because it monitors searches for new cars on its platform. And it says that the demand for EVs in the UK is down year over year for the first time since the pandemic began. Now, if you remember, post-pandemic, there was an increase in demand for cars, and there was an exponential increase in demand for electric cars as people decided that they liked the idea of cleaner air, because obviously in lockdown, we had very clean air in the urban environments, and also they wanted to have their own cars, so people were moving towards electric cars, and so that's since then, the sales have been growing. But for the first time since then, there has been, actually, believe it or not, according to Autotrader, a double-digit decline in 2022, is 12.6% down. Now, looking at a broader picture worldwide in 2022, EV sales during the first half of the year, 4.3 million brand new electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid vehicles were sold. This is a global figure. And between new and used vehicles, over the course of 2022, there were 10.6 million vehicles sold, which represents an increase of 57% from 2021. So again, you know, globally, the picture looks good for EVs. However, sales growth in Europe have been declining, and this is obviously as a result of economic problems, which of course have been made worse by the war in Ukraine, and as has been widely reported, the global components shortage. Now, due to the high cost of living crisis that's currently going on, there's a lot of skepticism here in the UK in particular towards electrification. And in the UK, demand, according to, as we've seen from Auto Trader, has fallen. EVs represented fewer than a fifth, that's 19% of new car inquiries received by dealers on the Auto Trader website. They're also citing rising energy costs and reduced prices for gasoline. I'll come back to this, and diesel, which are potentially part of why that's happening and why we're seeing that. There's also been the other thing. There was a highly publicized situation, particularly over the winter, where it became very apparent that the UK doesn't have enough chargers, or public chargers, I should say, as we saw queues of Teslas outside chargers waiting for hours. If you think about every car that plugs in would spend at least 30 minutes to get up to 80%, which is a minimum requirement for an electric car. According to Fleet News in the UK, the UK needs between 253,000 and 661,000 extra electric vehicle charging points by 2035 to meet the projected needs, in order to, of course, phase out the internal combustion engine, or the ICE, as we often refer to it. However, at the moment in the UK, there's actually less than 40,000 public chargers. That's a little bit of an issue, and that has clearly put people off. And also the fact that the rising energy costs is putting people off. In fact, we often used to present EVs as a much cheaper way of running a car over the longer term, because of, you know, petrol being more expensive and charging being cheaper. However, that has dramatically changed, especially recently, because petrol prices had shot up, obviously, but now they've actually come down quite significantly. And in fact, according to the RAC, the cost of public charging, this is the cost of rapid public charging, has increased by 50% in 8 months, for electric cars. Now, these rises, of course, have been driven by the increase in pricing of electricity. And that means that drivers now pay about £36 to charge a typical family car with a 64 kilowatt battery to 80% charge. And that's enough to cover, say, about 185 miles or so. Now, this is more than twice the cost of charging the same car at home. Now, again, if you're able to charge at home, that is the best way to own an electric car. If you have a driveway, if you can get a smart charger installed that can basically choose the right times, choose the best tariffs, and then charge your car to the extent that you need it, that's the best way to do it. But doing it, you know, and they reckon that will cost you about just under £18 to do that. So, but doing, and that compares to, obviously, as I've just said, £36 at a public charger. Your cost per mile basically equates to about 20 pence per mile. That's using a regular charger. Using an ultra rapid charger, it's only another pence extra. It's about 21 pence extra. So 21 pence per mile. So we used to say that it used to be about 10 pence or less. And now when you come to a petrol car, then they've cited the fact that if you have a petrol car that does about 40 miles per gallon, it's about 17 pence per mile. And for a diesel equivalent, it's about 20 pence per mile. So the diesel is now on par with electric vehicles, and the petrol car is now actually cheaper to run in terms of fueling it, if you like, than an EV. Brown car guy. Now, of course, the other problem with EVs is the expensive components that go into it. And by that, of course, we mean the batteries. And of course, there's a lot of discussion and a lot of talk about, you know, where we get the materials that we need to create those batteries and the implications of those, the socioeconomic implications. I have to just touch on something, because a lot of people keep coming on and say, oh, well, look at all these, you know, kids and you know, working in the mines and stuff like that. A lot of that actually relates to cobalt mining and illegal cobalt mining in the Congo. That's where a lot of that is actually happening. And those mines are actually illegal, but it is a problem. It does exist. There's no denying that, but it is something that there is a crackdown on it. They are trying to tackle it, and they're trying to basically stop the illegal mines from exploiting child labor and, of course, fundamentally affecting the environment and affecting people's health in those areas. It's also worth saying that that's for cobalt, and cobalt inclusion in EV batteries is I think it's less than 5%, and in some batteries they're just phasing it out completely, and most of the industry is moving towards that anyway. At the moment, the situation is that most of the lithium is coming from Australia for the EV batteries, followed by closely by China. And this is despite the fact that where in the world is there the most lithium? Where is the biggest deposits of lithium? Well, it's called the lithium triangle, and it actually consists of Chile, Argentina, and Bolivia. This is where you have the biggest amounts of lithium. However, there are issues, and the issues, for example, Bolivia is producing very little of it because of environmental and technological constraints. In Argentina, they have economic issues. They just can't afford to build those new mines in order to do that. Each of these mines takes about 6 years to construct before it effectively produces lithium that that can then be refined into something that will be used in batteries. And Chile has very tight mining regulations. So in each of those places, there are issues. A ton of lithium, to mine for a ton of lithium, uses about 400,000 liters of water. And that's the other problem with places like that and other places where you might find it. If there's an arid country, then water is very, very precious. Believe me, I've lived in the Middle East. It's very precious, and you don't want to be using it up for something like that if you need it for other things. So it is widely predicted that quite possibly there's going to be a lithium shortage hitting around 2030, which of course is the UK deadline for switching entirely away from petrol and diesel engines to brand new EV car sales. Now let's move to the car industry itself specifically, and the fact that it is not quite able to keep up with the demand for cars, but also with the technology that's going on. So ABB Robotics is a technology company that supplies manufacturing robots, and they teamed up with an industry publication, Automotive Manufacturing Solutions, and they surveyed 600 global experts. These were from vehicle manufacturers and suppliers at all levels of management, engineering, and also talked to other key professionals throughout the automotive world. And they surveyed these people, and what they found was that more than half, 59% in fact, believe that the shift to pure electric vehicle production is not achievable within the current legislative timeline. So the current regulatory requirements, we are not going to be able to do that. So for example, here in the UK, 2030, they reckon it's not going to be possible. The respondent survey highlighted the challenges in adapting to new battery supply chains, as we've just discussed. The other issues that they've highlighted was the high levels of capital investment required, of course, the shortage of raw materials, and the lack of suitable infrastructure. And also, they also highlighted the grid capacity. This is a lot of things that people have often said to me, is like, won't the grid just fall over if we all plug our electric cars in? It won't fall over, because there are systems in place to stagger electricity and to stagger charge and move it around and stuff like that. But having said that, yes, the demand is going to increase on national grids. That will happen. Going back to the people surveyed, 28% expressed the opinion that the deadlines were, in fact, achievable, but that there would be significant challenges. So this is in addition to the 59 that have just said no, while 18% believe that the present targets would never be met. So actually, they will never meet the target. So 18% say this is actually just not possible to switch entirely to EVs. Only 11% said that the regional targets for EV adoption by 2030 to 2040 were actually achievable. Only 11%. Now, this survey also highlighted the challenges that are involved in, as I've said, the battery supply chain. And that's been cited as a problem, as a barrier to getting to those targets by 19% of people that were surveyed. Elsewhere, the lack of charging infrastructure, so coming back to that issue that we've discussed already, but even the industry is very aware of that, and they said that that is possibly, many of them said that's the single biggest constraint to EV adoption by more than a quarter, 26% said that that was what they were most concerned about, that there just isn't the charging infrastructure, and that's going to put people off buying the cars, and therefore the targets cannot be met. 17% highlighted the vehicle prices as the principal barrier to EV growth, and that's of course another key issue, that the electric cars are expensive. They're starting to come down. There are some affordable cars now. I say affordable, but you take, for example, the MG4 is probably the most affordable EV that is really good, that I would recommend in the market. £26,000, it's the price of about a Ford Focus, so you know it's getting there. But most EVs are starting at 35,000 plus, even for the smallest ones. Brown car guy. Traditional car manufacturers actually completely need to change their entire approach to car making. And some people have said that they need a startup mentality, a startup mindset. And this makes sense because this is entirely new cars. The technology is completely new. It's a complete departure. Even the way that a pure electric car is constructed is a departure from the way that we've constructed cars for most of the last 100 years or so. This is why, for example, it's taken legacy or traditional car manufacturers so long to catch up with the likes of startups such as Tesla that have basically had a runaway success with it because they got in there first, and also their marketing was fantastic. That's where they need to be given credit in terms of making electric cars desirable and sexy. The quality of the cars wasn't that great. It's still not that great because it's not a legacy manufacturer, but they didn't stop them. Like they say, startup mentality. Get out there and do your beta testing in the public environment. Manufacturers don't do that. Manufacturers don't want to get sued. They want their cars to be perfect before they go out into the market. More on that in a minute. Let's come to StoreDot. Now, StoreDot works on developing extremely fast charging electric vehicle batteries. So it's claiming that next year it will have a battery that will be able to give you 100-mile range in just 5 minutes charging time, which is very, very good. But at the same time, they said that the manufacturers aren't able to keep up with the sort of technology that companies like these are offering. They said the automotive manufacturers need to reevaluate their traditional technology introduction timelines in order to accelerate the adoption of these game-changing technologies such as their batteries into their vehicles so that there's a swifter uptake of EVs. Without that, they reckon it's not going to happen. Now, traditionally, car companies are said to be locked into sequential prototype and testing processes with timescales that fit the familiar long cycles of internal combustion engine. What I mean by that is that typically the development, so say there's a new Toyota Corolla that hits the market today, the manufacturer is already developing, by the time you've got that first new car, the manufacturer is already well into developing the next generation, because that development cycle can take between 5 to 7 years. And it's not just the designing and developing of the car, but then it's the testing to destruction that they have to do in order to be satisfied that they've created something that is reliable, durable, that is safe, and they can put out on the market. And based on experiences in automotive history, particularly in America, they won't get sued for this, that, or the other. But of course, with electric cars, things are different, because the way the electric cars, like I said, like I've implied before, the construction of an electric car is something that's called a modular platform, often referred to as a skateboard, because basically what you can do is you just create the base, the platform with the batteries in it, wheels at each end, and you can either put the motors on the axles or within the wheels themselves, and then that's it. Then you've got your car, and basically the rest of it is involving just putting the body on top, which then also means, and also that modular platform is actually reconfigurable, so you can change the tracking and the length and the tracking, so you can make it longer or you can make it wider. You can make it higher. So basically, you could use the same thing to build anything from a small city hatchback to a big giant SUV. You could build it on the same platform. You just have to reconfigure a little bit. So this is where it's going. The car industry itself is suffering because of this. And this, of course, is a major part of what's going on. The Ford, for example, has already announced massive cutbacks in its factories and facilities across Europe. This was in the news recently, and they have warned that making electric cars requires 40% less staff, for 40% less people. Nearly half of their workforce will have to go when they convert fully to electric cars, because EVs just contain fewer parts. And so we're talking about a major upheaval and major job losses in the car industry, which, let's be honest, in most countries contributes billions to the GDP of those countries. I've said this in other videos, in fact, but legacy car makers are likely to be caught up in this EV revolution and disappear altogether, because they just won't be able to pivot so quickly and adapt to this new way of developing, building, and selling cars. This is why we are starting to see this or an emerging fight back from the car industry itself. Oh yeah. So for example, while we in the UK had a deadline of 2030, in Europe they had a deadline of 2035, and that's already now looking very shaky and unlikely to happen. Basically what's happened is that Germany's car industry and Italy's car industry have basically thrown a giant spanner in the works. Germany is insisting that there needs to be and actually I agree with them, that there needs to be more focus on alternative forms of fuel as well, so such as e-fuels produced using electricity from renewable hydrogen or other gases, and of course, as I referred to earlier, other alternative fuels, maybe using carbon extraction technology and stuff like that, because they see the fact that, you know, ICE cars will continue for a long, long time. You know, come 2030, come 2035, the existing cars that are being used are not all going to disappear. They're still going to be here, and they'll probably be with us for another 30, 40 years after that. They still need to be fueled. So it doesn't make sense to completely move away from that technology and to not look at alternative fuels when we're still going to need to fuel these cars, whether they're classic cars or daily use cars. So that's why Germany is objecting to it, and Italy is objecting it, because they just don't want to do it. It's as simple as that, you know. And Italy being the home of supercar brands such as Ferrari and Lamborghini, you can't really blame them, can you? And 2035, don't forget, Europe had 5 years more of ICE than we did here in the UK, and that's already now looking unlikely. Very likely it's going to be pushed to 2040. So what does that mean for the UK deadline? Brown car guy. So to conclude, the reality is that we have multiple issues here. Manufacturers just can't build EVs fast enough. They can't adopt the new technology fast enough, which is changing itself very rapidly. So what happens with EVs is the moment you buy one, it's pretty much out of date because new technology is already around the corner. And also what you got to think about is that, well, you just say, okay, well, we'll just keep buying newer ones. Well, that doesn't make sense, because as stats put out by Volvo a few months ago, and Volvo, of course, are heavily banking through Volvo itself and Polestar are heavily banking on electric cars, but even they admitted that the typical footprint, carbon footprint of making an electric car is 26 tons, and that compares to about 6 tons for a petrol or a diesel car. That's a significant difference. I mean, if you're talking about your existing car, and this is where I think the Germans have a point, if your existing car, the average annual carbon footprint of using an existing car, so just forget about what it costs to produce, that's already done, but existing car, 4.6 tons a year. That means that you could use your existing car for 5 years rather than buy a brand new EV, because it's the same amount of carbon footprint tonnage. So when you start to think of it that way, you start to think, well, you know, it doesn't make sense to rush headlong into this and to replace the entire world's cars with EVs, A, because we can't, because as we've discussed, we don't have the materials, and B, because surely that's going to be an environmental catastrophe. That's just going to be a disaster. So we've got to be realistic. EVs are definitely part of our motoring future. There's no question. They're here to stay. They're fantastic cars. For a lot of people, I recommend them. If you live in the city, if you live in London, if you have a house in the driveway and you can install a charger at home, for many people, that makes perfect sense. If you install some solar panels on your roof, you might be motoring for free. Yes, of course, there is the additional cost of buying that car. But as we've seen, that's coming down, and parity, I think, is getting there. Probably by next year, we're going to have price parity on between EVs and ICE cars. So they're part of the solution. However, we need to look at all solutions for private and commercial transport. For a lot of people, they're looking at hydrogen for commercial vehicles, long-distance lorries and stuff like that. Because the problem with hydrogen as a fuel is the infrastructure. However, if you're using commercial vehicles, well, they all have one depot or somewhere, then it kind of starts to make sense. So that's something that needs to be looked at. We cannot be dismissive of fuel, regular fuel, e-fuels, hydrogen, and other alternatives that may or may not have yet been discovered or developed yet. We need to look at everything. Oil alone, like I said, I do believe the manufacturers are probably going to be continuing to build ICE cars way past 2035, because we will have oil. We have oil for about nearly another 50 years worth, you know. And then, of course, once we run out of that, we've come up with technologies on how to create alternatives to that. Synthetic oil, e-fuels, biofuels, for example. You know, there is ways of doing that and actually still achieving net zero. And I think this is the key point. I think the main thing about all of this is that we're rushing headlong to put all of our eggs into one basket. And I think that's a mistake that we're making. And I think that a lot of car manufacturers who are saying that we need to cast our net wider and look at all different ideas and solutions are absolutely right. That's not to say EVs are bad. EVs are good. But EVs are not the only answer. Brown car guy. Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free. but this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.